On the heels of a seismic Saturday in the Southeastern Conference, it is Second Helping right here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer back with you alongside my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard, longtime college football analyst there for First Coast News in Jacksonville, Florida. He is also a voter for the most prestigious honor in college football, that being, of course, the Heisman Trophy. I'm going to continue to sell. I'm going to try to sell one guy in particular to our Heisman Trophy voter here on the program today. Not sure how much I'll have to twist his arm because he's a guy that we've talked about extensively here on Second Helping. Wasn't a surprise to us, the events. Maybe the final score certainly was a surprise, but to see Diego Pavia doing his thing against a really, really good football team in the Alabama Crimson Tide, not a huge surprise for us, but it wasn't just Alabama Vanderbilt, Brent. Yes. Tennessee going on the road, going down, scoring just 14 points in Fayetteville. And I guess in terms of Vegas, it wasn't necessarily an upset, but the manner in which Texas A&M took apart a top 10 team in Missouri.
Tell you what, we can also throw in, Trav, even though this is an SEC segment, Michigan losing to Washington, Southern Cal losing to Minnesota, Louisville losing to SMU. Yep. And Trav, boy, by the hair of their chinny-chin-chin, those Miami Hurricanes were almost involved with this list that basically went down to the bitter end with a lot of controversy with that. Yeah. Unbelievable Saturday, that something that we, and particularly in the SEC, three top 10 teams going down has never happened before. And Trav, in this new era of the expanded playoff, I think we're going to see some historical things happen, don't you?
It seems that way. What do we have left in the SEC? One unbeaten team?
Yeah.
And we're approaching mid-October. We're not truly in mid-October here on October the 7th by any means, and you've got one undefeated team left among 16 now in the Southeastern Conference, that being, of course, the University of Texas. Texas on the bye week along with Oklahoma. Pretty prolific bye week around the league. But, man, the games we did have, they did not disappoint for the most part. And, you know, what we like to do here on the program is when we do our review of the previous week, we hand out superlatives and maybe non-superlatives as we work through this. And we always start, Brent, with the surprise of the week. I don't know how you can't look but in one direction, and that being Nashville, Tennessee, because the 23-point home underdog, Diego Pavia led Vanderbilt Commodores, shocked the Alabama Crimson Tide 40-35. The goalposts end up in the Cumberland River. I don't think Alabama's playoff chances went into the river with the goalpost, but still, boy, what a performance by Vanderbilt and Diego Pavia. And not just him. I mean, give that staff credit. They had an excellent plan offensively.
Really did.
Held on to the football, made good of pretty much all of their red zone opportunities, and then had a guy in Pavia when they needed it most could deliver.
They never trailed. They only punted twice. But the thing that really amazed me, when you're 12 of 18 on third down, you really are not going to lose when you were that confident going in. And speaking of confidence, Diego has more than some teams total do. Just an amazing performance in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm with you, no way in the world that that the teams that lost, they're still in the they were still in the playoff hunt. That's something we couldn't have said last year at this point either. But as big of a surprise as we have seen, and look, for our listeners and viewers, the Vanderbilt Alabama game was a great example of why Travis Ryer and I love the triple option and all that goes along with it, whether it be the inverted wishbone or the wishbone or just basically on the option Right. Trev, people think it's outdated. We certainly know that's not the fact with the with our military institutions, who, by the way, Army and Navy still undefeated, which is rather exciting. But in looking at it from the purest sense of the word, what they did with their running game and their triple option, or however we want to phrase it, Trav, frankly, was remarkable, was it not?
It's the great equalizer in some ways. It's kind of like the three-point shot in basketball.
Yes.
You know, you can be out-athleted, you can be out-rostered, and if you can shoot the three, you got a chance. And from a preparation standpoint, you go from Georgia to an academy-style sort of offense with a trigger guy. That, you know, we can talk about wishbone, option, all those things. Yeah. When you've got the right guy running that thing, that's when it takes it to an entirely different level. And I'm sure a guy like Paul Johnson, the former Georgia Tech head coach, he probably enjoyed Saturday as much as anyone. But, yeah, give Tim Beck, offensive coordinator for Vanderbilt, a lot of credit. Had a great plan, possessed the football for like 42 minutes, and got the things an underdog needed in the game. I mean, it was going to take something like a non-offensive touchdown. Mm-hmm. You were going to need to be plus in turnover margin. I know the stats showed Vanderbilt is plus two, but Alabama had a mistake on a punt where they had two number twos on the field together on a punt return. And that essentially equated to a turnover because it kept the possession alive for Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt made good use of it, went down and went up 20-7. And at that point, you knew this was probably going to be a four-quarter football game. So, we talk about it from the Vanderbilt perspective in terms of the Alabama side of things, and this is a surprise segment here. What surprised you the most about this from that Crimson Tide viewpoint?
I think people thought the Alabama defense would at some point be able to figure this out and be able to stop Vanderbilt. They were not. And that really cost them dearly in the game. I mean, I thought the offense did okay and was pretty solid. I mean, the thing that really, and we've talked about this for 30 years, when you see a discrepancy in the number of plays in this game, that Alabama had 40-something plays, and they were pretty efficient with that. But when your opponent gets, what, Trav, in the 70s, near 80, that's one of the things you look at in a stat that can make a difference in the game. And by bleeding the clock and eating up yardage, it sure did in this one.
As Diego Pavia's self-professed biggest fan, I wasn't surprised by anything he did. I guess what surprised me about the Alabama defense, and you're right, I mean, you give up 12 of 18 – to anyone, they're going to have a chance in the game, was that even when Vanderbilt went between the tackles with Cedric Alexander, the running back, they found some room. They pushed Alabama around at times. Now, I know in that offense, a lot of it's based on angles and, you know, not necessarily manhandling people. It can look like you're doing that when you're really not, because it's concepts and schemes that are probably taking over more than anything. But that first touchdown for Vanderbilt in the game on Saturday, when Alexander and that offensive line just basically took Alabama's front seven into the end zone from 7 yards out, that gave you a little bit of a temp check maybe on where the Alabama defense was at. And it's real now for Kalen DeBoer. And it's real for Kane Womack, the defensive coordinator, because he's a little bit unorthodox in how he goes about things defensively. And the question's going to be, exactly how much of that do you need to be at Alabama?
Right.
You have the people. You have the personnel. I understand people want to have their own spin on things. They believe in their stuff. But here's another side of this, too. You know, during the Nick Saban era, Brent, we heard so much about, well, the coordinators, the assistants don't get to talk except maybe in the preseason and at the bowl game or the college football playoff games when they have to be made accessible. Well, they get to talk now.
Yes.
So this Monday is going to be an interesting one for Alabama from that side of things, because Kalen will talk, Nick Sheridan, the offensive coordinator, is going to talk, and Kane Womack's going to talk. And what I expect is Kane Womack to get up there and just take it all. You know, he's just going to take it all. But, you know, it wasn't just football related where Alabama disappointed the fan base on Saturday. You had the Malachi Moore situation at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Basically a meltdown on the field. Mm-hmm. Apparently they tried to get him off. He wouldn't come off the field. So now it's not just are you sound in your concepts and your principles on the field. When things like that happen, now the culture comes into question a little bit, especially when you're transitioning from Nick Saban to the next guy.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And that is, and particularly for Malachi Moore, who's a captain, and they selected captains early. I mean, he was a logical choice. I get that. But if you're going to be a captain, and even some of the players were commenting on it, and I think that's something that can be fixed. I think the other thing that is a real concern, in the last six quarters of football, Bama's defense has given up 60 points and forced only three punts on 15 possessions.
Yeah.
Now as you have chronicled in your excellent YouTube work, now this defense is young and they're inexperienced. And I can tell you, if our mutual friend Corky Rogers was here, the former Bowles coach, I think he would say, guys, I didn't see a lot of assignment football because a lot of you were out of position. So, Travis, giving up 60 points in the last few quarters is something absolutely to work on.
Well, and Alabama did a favor for future Vanderbilt opponents because in terms of prep week engagement, attention to detail, the things that you have to bring during the practice week, it's too late on Saturday.
It sure is.
You know, and so whereas I still think Vanderbilt can get another SEC win or two, I think it's tougher now because the book is out. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. It should have been after the Virginia Tech win for Vanderbilt. Yes. But then you lose on the road to Georgia State, and I think everybody kind of goes, well, they lost to Georgia State.
Yeah.
And then they show you on Saturday what they are capable of if you aren't locked in and engaged and attention to detail oriented and taking care of fundamental football. And so even this week, you know, Mark Stoops got to be the happiest guy in the SEC right now.
Really?
Because that's who's next for Vanderbilt. And that game is in Lexington. So even after the big win for Kentucky at Ole Miss a couple Saturdays ago, engagement should be there, especially coming off a bye week. We'll talk about that game a little bit more later in the week. Going to be an interesting Media Monday, though, in Tuscaloosa. Player of the week for week seven, I guess, in the Southeastern Conference, week six. Let's not fast forward this thing, right, more than we need to. Is it as simple as Diego for you, or maybe do you have another player in mind for this one, Brent?
I'll let you take Diego. I'm going to go with Graham Mertz, who is 19 of 23 for 179 and a touchdown. Now, look, Mertz is not going to win the Heisman, but in Florida's past two wins, Trap Mertz has tossed only six incompletions. He's completed 38 of 44 for 380 with four touchdowns and no interceptions. Now, DJ Lagway played well, too. So I'm going with Mertz. Because look, you and I talked about this in the offseason, too. Their problems were not going to be on offense probably with Mertz. No. Mertz is competent. Their problem right now, like Alabama's, is on the defensive side of the ball, even though they played much better. We'll get into that in a few minutes. But I Trev, just to be different, because I love Diego too, I'll go with Mertz on this one.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of buzz about DJ Lagway, the true freshman quarterback, and understandably so. But if nothing else, give Billy Napier credit for being fair with Graham Mertz, because even before the injury and he went out against Miami, you knew he had a large sample size of very efficient play. And that's a great selection, I think, because Florida has sort of been relegated to irrelevance. Mm-hmm. That was a big win for the Gators. It over was. UCF. You got to kind of keep the commuter schools in Florida in their place if you're Florida, Florida State, or Miami. Yeah. And look, I know UCF has become a massive on-campus situation down there in Orlando, but nice, nice pick there. I would also suggest Connor Wegman for Texas A&M.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk about the Aggies maybe a little bit more coming up here in a second, but I was of the belief that it might be portal time for Connor Wegman because it seemed as if Marcel Reed was trending in a direction of taking that situation over. Give Mike Elko credit. He goes back to Connor Wegman, healthy now, apparently throws for 276. Really nice balanced approach in that 41-10 blowout of Missouri on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, I got to go with Diego here. And that's a historic win.
Right.
I mean, that's a statue type of win for Diego. I'll say this, the biggest disappointment for Vandy is that you only got him for a year.
Yeah,
so here's a couple of things coming out of the weekend too that I would say. If you are Clark Lee, you know Diego's gone after this year, but you need to go ahead and get Tim Beck extended right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get your extension first and foremost.
Yes.
Clark Lee. Go ahead and get yourself taken care of, but make sure you get Tim Beck taken care of, because if he goes, I think Vanderbilt's kind of right back to where they were with Diego moving on as well. So I got to go Diego. That's an impactful win to not only him and Vanderbilt, but again, maybe to a couple of coaches as well. What about the team on the rise coming out of Saturday? You know, we had Arkansas upsetting Tennessee in Fayetteville Saturday night. Do you go with Vanderbilt? I guess this is more of a trust question than anything else, because while it was seismic in terms of Arkansas winning, Vanderbilt winning, do you trust either of those teams to truly be on a trajectory that shows them making big improvement as the schedule moves on? Or do you have another team in mind, maybe a Texas A&M?
I'll go with Arkansas. And the reason is their defense –
yeah,
allowing only 16 points a game, 353 a game. And, Trav, they forced five turnovers. Now, the truth of the matter is Arkansas should be undefeated, should they not? They've got it. You know, I still go back to that double overtime debacle against Oklahoma State. That really should have worked out. And then you've got the
A&M. They gave that game away, yeah.
They really did. Oh, yeah. And now, Arkansas is off this week, so they've appreciated that. And my, oh, my, when Sam Pittman was quite happy and was glad to let his athletic director deal with storming the field and the fine that would go with that. But basically at the break, at the halfway point of the season, almost, Trev, did we think in the beginning of the season that Arkansas would be in this good a shape right now?
I'd say they're ahead of schedule.
I agree.
But you're right. If you had told me, look, they're going to beat Tennessee at home, I would have thought, well, they're going to get either A&M Oklahoma State while they're at it. And so whereas you're happy for Arkansas and it was a huge win Saturday night, you are kind of left thinking, you know, as good as this feels right now, this should probably be a 5-1 or, maybe even a 6-0. They were that close in both those losses. So I like the pick of Arkansas. I guess I question now the health of Taylen Green. This bye week, as you said, comes at a – give Singleton a lot of credit jumping in there.
He really did.
Directing that go-ahead drive. I thought it was interesting late there in the fourth quarter. Tennessee essentially let Arkansas score with like 117.
Yeah,
it wasn't like there was 236 or something. There was like 117. It wasn't a lot of time. I know Josh Heupel has the utmost confidence in himself and his offense and Nico. But I thought it was kind of odd to let just Arkansas score there and take more than a field goal lead, right? If Arkansas, you know, was in a situation where they were going to be able to go up three and you could tie it with a field goal and force, you know, extend the game that way, maybe I get that, but that was an interesting finish. I think Nico's going to be, and we may talk about this in the next segment, but that's going to be a lot of the noise in Knoxville. And again, on a big stage, that offense just didn't really produce. Kind of saw some signs of it at Oklahoma. Give Travis Williams a lot of credit. You're right. We talk about things that need to get done quickly in terms of extensions. If you're Sam Pittman, I think they just did something with Travis Williams, but whatever you got to do,
really,
that guy there is the defensive coordinator, the former Auburn linebacker, you need to make happen. I'm going to go with Texas A&M as my team on the rise. I think across the board, they check boxes in terms of legitimacy for the bigger picture here as we get into the second half of the schedule, because defensively with Elko and that front and some of those dudes they've got, I think they can hold up. And with Wegman maybe trending in the right direction, that's a win-win for the Aggies. What about the team on the decline coming out of week six, Brent? Who would that be?
We have talked about this. And look, their season's not over. Trev, what in the world has happened to Missouri?
Yeah.
We have kind of seen this coming. What you've got going on right now is Brady Cook is not very accurate, which I find they tackle poorly. They can't cover anybody. Again, as you said, I give A&M a lot of credit. They were ready for this. But the other thing is, when we've seen what Missouri has done as of late, I think a lot of people probably saw this coming, frankly. But, the Boston College game, the Vanderbilt game.
Should have lost the Vanderbilt game. That was, to me, as telling as anything. Boston College was extremely competitive, but we talk about teams that are kicking themselves right now. Vanderbilt should have two top 10 wins.
Yeah.
They missed three field goals in that game. A couple in regulation that probably could have won it for Vanderbilt in Como. But, Missouri right now is an empty suit and had the look of one in terms of legitimate SEC college football playoff contenders. And now their schedule doesn't necessarily help them. Because they've been tagged as a fraud, like a heavy fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the drop in the rankings that Missouri's gone through in the last couple of weeks, the last couple of games in the aftermath, they go from 9th to 21st after that loss to Texas A&M. And that's against a quality opponent. I don't think that's a knock so much on A&M as it is Missouri just wasn't very competitive in that game. And so the best thing in some ways for Missouri is its schedule, though. Because now you get back to playing UMass. And,
on the road, did you see that?
Yeah, that's wild. are they playing that at the Patriots?
I would think they'd have to be. Yeah. Our late good friend Greg Larson would say, "When in the world, Travis?"
No, that says that game's being played at McGurk Alumni Stadium.
What?
Amherst, Massachusetts.
In the capacity for that, Travis, what?
It could be 8. That's all it probably needs to be. That's coming up. That's a noon Eastern kickoff this week.
Oh, my.
For Missouri. That's on ESPN2, by the way.
Yeah.
So, I think we're kind of in unison there on our teams on the decline. Yes. I'm not ready to maybe go there entirely with Tennessee. It'll be an interesting week, though. Because you kind of had the sense a few weeks ago that like Florida and Tennessee would be going in totally opposite directions. And now that feels maybe a good bit different for those two clubs looking at their matchup coming up Saturday night in Knoxville. So as we move to our final category here, this kind of ties into a lot of what we were just talking about. I think team with the most to prove as you look ahead to week 7. I mean, Alabama's got a lot to prove. South Carolina, after that egg, we haven't even talked about Ole Miss and South Carolina. I don't know who the heck South Carolina is, really, at this point. Is South Carolina the team that went to Lexington and dominated a good Kentucky team, or is it the one that was really just didn't provide any resistance much to Ole Miss, and give Ole Miss credit too.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people on South Carolina going into that game thinking that, oh, here we go. Got it. You know, got a taste of it at home against Kentucky. Now got to go to Columbia, and Lane and his team took care of business. Jackson Dart, Henry Parrish, defensively, I think they showed you once again that they can lean on that side of the ball as well. But what about it? Team with most approved going into week seven, Brent.
Well, I'm going to throw one out that is maybe a little unusual, but I'm going to say Oklahoma. Oklahoma plays Texas, and Trav, we know they've got a really on the verge of being an elite defense. We still don't think they can do much offensively. So I'm going to be interested to see what the point spread is on this. I mean, is this going to be double digits? Maybe, but because of Oklahoma's lack. I mean, but we certainly saw what they did, and they had to have a pick six to do it in order to beat Auburn. But I don't have any doubt they can stay on the field with their defense for a while. But, Trav, at some point against Texas, you've got to have, what, a couple of drives that bleed the clock and give them a little bit better of a chance. So I'm going to say if the Sooners want to be taken more seriously than the 6-6 team, and I know we have some Oklahoma listeners that they don't want to hear that, and I like Oklahoma and I like Venables, but the reality is, don't they have to prove something offensively this week?
Yeah, they've got a 10-win ceiling type of defense.
They do.
But the offense still feels kind of 6-win-ish.
Yes.
Even with the intangibles and the athleticism of Michael Hawkins, Jr. at the quarterback position. I think for Hawkins against Texas, he's going to have to be Diego-ish.
He really is.
Like Pavia was against Alabama. He doesn't have to win the game, but when he needs to make some plays, and coming off the bye week, it'll be interesting to see maybe what they have implemented offensively to help him, because in the receiver situation for Oklahoma has been well documented in terms of the injuries at offensive line. I don't think this is the same Texas defensive front, especially on the interior
right.
that we saw a year ago. So maybe you match up a little bit better there. I like the pick of Oklahoma there. Mm-hmm. I think it's Alabama for me because you lose to Vanderbilt for the first time since 1984 and under a first-year head coach, and your previous head coach is getting trolled for saying Vanderbilt's the easiest place to play.
Right.
Well, it was for Nick Saban. I mean, the last time Nick Saban went to Nashville in 2017, Alabama beat Vanderbilt in historic fashion, 59-0. So from Nick's perspective, he was right, because for him in his years as an SEC head coach, it didn't get any easier than what Alabama did to Vanderbilt in 2017. Now, Kalen DeBoer has got a little different perspective of that after last Saturday. So it's not just about can the defense improve under Kane Womack. It's culture now. Everything you're doing on a day-to-day basis, because no one had a problem with a lot of this 180 turn from the Nick Saban era until you lose a game.
Yes.
And then when you lose, everything goes out onto the table. Everything is parsed through and put under the microscope. So I think in every facet, Alabama with an early kickoff at 11 a.m. Central on Saturday against South Carolina, I think that's brought into play. I'll give you another one too for the road here. I think you could say Tennessee as well, coming off that loss, but I don't worry as much about Tennessee playing at home. You know, it's almost though like we've forgotten entirely about LSU, right? After that season opening loss to USC, and now that loss is losing luster as SC accumulates multiple losses in the wake of that game. But hosting Ole Miss Saturday night at Death Valley, right? But unfortunately, this is an LSU team that's been hit with some critical injuries already, as we know. And I guess as much as anything, can they hang in on the defensive side against Lane Kiffin and Jackson Dart in that Ole Miss offense? We'll talk more about that later in the week. But I'll go Alabama. And then if I was going to throw another one in there, it would be LSU, because Mm-hmm. We're in a rivalry weekend with the Red River game, mm-hmm. right, with Oklahoma and Texas. But for me, the varsity game this week is Ole Miss at LSU.
No question.
Two top 15 teams, games in Baton Rouge, college football playoff hopes mm-hmm. very much on the line for both these teams. So that should be a fun one, to say the least. Well, Brent, anything else you want to throw in here before we check out on a Monday morning?
Yeah. Just to whet people's appetite, you've done some of that. How about this for Saturday? Oregon and Ohio State, Texas, Oklahoma, Penn State and USC. By the way, Riley is 9-11 in his last, make sure I got that right.
Yeah.
In his last, 11-9 in his last 20 games, Trav. And I hear Gator fans thinking about Lincoln Riley as a replacement for Napier. Ole Miss, LSU, Tennessee, Florida, Kansas State, and Colorado. A lot on the line on Saturday, isn't it, pal?
You know, it is on paper. It's a stellar Saturday coming up, not only in the SEC, but around college football. But what's funny is we thought this last Saturday was going to be sleepy, right? Yeah, we thought it was going to be, it'll be kind of chalky. It'll be a little bit of a respite before we really jump back into things on October the 12th. And lo and behold, chaos broke out on a seismic Saturday in the Southeastern Conference. Well, Brent, I know I don't have to sell you much as a Heisman Trophy voter, but I'm just gonna say,
Diego. Listen, he's in my short list. Can I say that?
Well, he's maybe 6 foot, so I make a lot of short lists. But the dude plays extremely, extremely large. And with that, Brent, thanks again, my man. Always a lot of fun. Look forward to previewing the October 12th slate coming up here in a couple of days here on Ryer on YouTube.
Enjoyed it, bud, as always.
And if you haven't already, we would appreciate you subscribing to Ryer on YouTube. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. Hit that notification bell while you're at it. That way you are alerted to our content as it drops on Ryer on YouTube. And also, if you don't mind, hit us with a thumbs up. Text Tider tells you right there. Hit us with a thumbs up. We appreciate that text as well. For Brent Prier, Travis Ryer, until next time, so long, everybody.